Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, the Red Sox will wear stars and stripes blazers to the White House on their visit this year. Now, let me ask you, do you love this, or do you really love it? Those are your only two choices.
Oh, those are my only choices?
That's it. You only get one or the other.
Then by the power granted to me in the United States Constitution, I request my right to remain silent.
See, I picked this because I knew that would be your stance. While I'm sure, once you got a look at the Blazers, you were fairly certain about what my stance would be.
Yeah, I had some idea.
I would just wear these Blazers like out to dinner on a Friday night.
Yeah. I bet you. I think that's probably accurate.
I think they're beautiful works of art.
For those of you listening at home, I know Andy, and that actually is probably not a hyperbolic statement.
No, go Google these Blazers, and you will look at them and be like, "Wow, yeah, you should wear these." I think everybody should get one from the issued to them by the government.
Yeah, that would be. I don't think some political group out there would have to have a problem with that.
Who could have a problem with that? People who don't love America, that's who. I support it 100%. I can't wait to see the team photo with the president with those Blazers. They even got the president one. I would like to have one, but I feel like they're not going to make any my size.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't know who's like. I'd like to put myself in David Ortiz's, though.
They have to have, like, some skinny Japanese pitcher.
Maybe like, I could who's their closer? They got the Koji Uehara.
Is that their closer still?
Is that their guy? Yeah, that's their guy, right? Yeah, maybe I could fit into his. He seems like a slim fellow.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up his stats here.
At first, I was thinking Dustin Pedroia, but then I realized he's entirely too short.
And too bulky.
Yes, too short and wide. I'm too tall and skinny. It'd be like trying to fit a lasagna noodles jacket onto a spaghetti noodle. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah, something like that. Like that.
That was the best metaphor I could think of on the spot right there.
Okay.
Do we have Koji Uehara's?
I'm getting there. He is 6'2", 195 pounds.
Yeah, I might have to get it tailored a little bit. I could fit into that, though.
How about, let's see here. Dustin Pedroia is 5'8", 165.
Yeah, see, that's probably not going to work for me. It's going to be too short in the sleeves.
How tall are you?
I am 6 feet tall.
Okay. How about Mike Napoli? He's 6 feet 220.
Whoa, boy.
Johnny Gomes, 6 foot 230.
No, not getting into those. I could wrap myself in those. Those would be like a blanket.
Craig Breslow, 6'1", 190.
Oh, now we're getting, yeah, see, like, that's my territory right there.
Craig Breslow, that's who you got to hit up, man.
Yep. I'm going to be tweeting Craig Breslow here once we're all done recording.
Buy his jacket when he puts it up on eBay.
Yeah. And I'm an elementary teacher. I'm poor. I hope it doesn't go for a lot.
It's only all right. Craig Breslow's jacket.
Just Craig Breslow's Stars and Stripes jacket. Let's talk about some real baseball, Jason, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. First, we're going to hit up everything in Pittsburgh's camp. After that, we're going to go to Cleveland, talk about what's going on there. This is probably going to be our last just general podcast before the regular season starts, because everything's kicking off Sunday.
That's right.
So we're going to have regular season baseball from here on out to be talking about. So let's get started talking about the big news in Pittsburgh, which I'm sure that you've definitely heard of by now. Starling Marte. It is rumored he has been extended by the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I did hear that.
You have heard that. You've probably heard that because we recorded this once and it didn't record.
You weren't supposed to say that. We only did your part once. I'm still fresh. Whenever we get to the Indians, that's still going to be spontaneous.
Did I ruin the illusion for our listeners?
I don't know.
The laughs are still genuine. They are, folks. I promise.
Oh, really? Starling Marte extended. I didn't know. What?
I did not hear
15-minute conversation with you about this.
I can't wait till we get halfway down through the discussion and I talk about Johnny Cueto dropping the baseball again. That's going to be my favorite part of this podcast.
Are you going to say that again?
Oh, yeah. You just wait. So it was reported that Starling Marte has agreed to a deal with the Pirates. Earlier in the week, Rob Bertemfel, the beat writer for the Pirates, he reported that the Pirates made two contract extension offers to Marte, who is arbitration eligible after next season and a free agent after 2018. Marte apparently turned down both of those extensions. So that got me kind of thinking, like, what kind of extension would make sense for Starling Marte? And I left this in the notes, so you can back me up on this, like, as I'm going through this thought process. I figured it would be something in the ballpark of a 6-year, $36 million contract, like somewhere around there.
Right.
Based on the fact that Julio Teheran signed his extension with the Braves for 6 years, $32.4 million. So I figured Starling Marte, everyday player, similar service time to Julio Teheran. I figured he would probably be making a little bit more than him. So you can imagine how excited I was when I saw that the rumor for Marte's deal was 6 years for $31 million. Right. And we've got two option years tacked on to the end.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you, Jason, what do you think about this deal as a non-Pirates fan? What do you think about the deal just off the top of your head?
I think that it's a pretty good deal. I was kind of growing concerned that they weren't going to be able to get something done when he rejected two offers.
Yeah, right.
So I was relieved for you when he signed today, or allegedly signed.
Right.
I think it's always a little unnerving, you know, to give a 6, possibly 8-year contract to someone with so little service time, but I mean, that's what you have to do to buy in the value, right? I mean, you either let them accumulate more service time and the cost continues to rise, or you buy in early and essentially lock in all this risk into the contract, but at a lower dollar amount. You know, it's like, I mean, if he plays 2 more years and has similar numbers, the deal's probably going to balloon to like 4 years and, I don't know, $50 million.
Right, yeah.
So you're kind of talking about the same amount of risk regardless.
Right. I mean, yeah. Well, you're looking at, you know, right now you're looking at about $5 million average annual value. For a player that has his upside, you know, like he's when he was coming up through the Pirates system, you know, he was considered that 65 type prospect on the 20 to 80 where, you know, I think I agree with his skill set. I think he could be a perennial all-star type player at his peak.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at last season, I think, you know, Marte has the underlying skill there to be a double-digit home run, double-digit steal type player. You know, obviously his legs aren't going to be a problem. The big thing that he's going to have to figure out is how to be more selective at the plate, how to evolve as a hitter, because the pitchers are going to adjust to him. So he needs to learn how to adjust to them, which means you can't fuel your on-base percentage with 26 hit-by-pitches. You know, you need to learn to be more selective to make sure that you're getting on base more consistently. You know, cutting down on those strikeouts, trying to make more, you know, it sounds cliched, but, you know, you want to make more productive outs instead of, you know, just striking out at that ridiculous rate. So, and I think, you know, every year you hear people talk about it, and, you know, for the last few years he's talked about how he's trying to make those adjustments. At some point you either buy in or you don't buy in. You know, I buy into it. I think he's going to make those adjustments. And I think, you know, if you look at Tampa Bay did this with Evan Longoria. And I agree with you. These small market teams have to do this. You know, Tampa Bay signed Evan Longoria like 2 weeks after he got called up to that big contract extension. You know, then they worked out another big deal a couple years into that contract. You know, I think it's just that's the way you have to do business when you're a smaller market team.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. And I mean, his combo of speed and power definitely plays up. That's for sure. I mean, he's got to cut down on the strikeouts. I mean, I think he's a good player. To become a perennial all-star kind of player, he has to get more plate discipline. I mean, he had like 100 strikeouts last year and like 20 walks or something.
Right.
I mean, like you said, if he didn't have 26 hit-by-pitches on top of that.
Oh, his on-base percentage would
that would have been ugly, man.
It would have pummeled. It would have been pummeled.
But I mean, that's how small market teams compete. And I mean, we don't want to get into a long-winded discussion about, you know, the state of the game, but I mean, that's just the reality. And I mean, you're right, the Rays do that. The Indians, you know, they've done it to much success and they've done it to many years of absolutely choking contracts. So it's a frustrating, potentially scary situation they've entered. There's nothing though that they can do it any other way.
Right.
I mean, you know, it worked out to great success for the Indians in the 90s and led them to like 5, 6, 7 years of continued success. And it did not work out and led to many years of bad contracts playing out in the 2000s. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Because it's
fun to watch those teams, man, let me tell you.
Right, yeah, with those just albatross contracts just killing them.
I mean, because it's $5 million average annual value, but that's a little skewed because he's probably going to make like $3 million this year and like $8 million the last year.
Right. Yeah. So, and then you're looking at those two option years, which, you know, and you know, we talked about this before we started recording, I think is, you know, his option years are going to be between 10 and 13, somewhere in that ballpark. You know, they're not going to be any less than 10, certainly.
No.
And you know, I think if you start going much higher than 13, you're talking about, you know, kind of cutting the legs underneath the value of the deal. So I don't know. I think it's a good deal for Pittsburgh. I think especially getting those option years tagged on to the end, you know, you're looking at potentially having control of Starling Marte through 2022. I think that could end up being a great deal.
Oh yeah. Your boy Francisco Liriano, how's he feeling? How's his groin feeling?
I've heard his groin's a little tender, little tightness in his groin. He left in the sixth inning of it was a start on March 20th against Baltimore. He had to leave the game because of tightness in his left groin. Apparently, he landed awkwardly after he was throwing a pitch, took him from the game. You know, they're saying that his opening day start is still in question. This is a different type of Liriano injury. You know, it's not like an arm injury, which is good. And he didn't hurt himself trying to kick in his kid's door or anything.
Oh, he did this one playing baseball.
Yeah, this was a baseball related injury. So well, that's good. Nice.
That's He's good.
Getting hurt and doing what you're getting paid for, I guess. So I don't know. If it develops into something serious, I don't know how many more blows Pittsburgh's rotation can take. Up at the top, you know, you talk about losing AJ Burnett, you know, to free agency, you know, then all of a sudden now you're putting a lot more stress on the top of that rotation with Liriano, Cole, and Charlie Morton. You know, you start talking about taking Liriano out of there and like, oh boy,
yeah.
Like what do we do now? Which that brings me to another really interesting point, which is on the Pirates website, Liriano stated that he wants to remain in Pittsburgh. He wants to stay a Pittsburgh Pirate. I don't know if you're familiar with Pittsburgh's history the last 20 years or so, Jason. This has not always been the case in Pittsburgh.
Well, it's called a winning culture.
I'm not familiar with this.
Oh yeah, okay, that's right. You lost for 20 consecutive seasons.
Yeah, not familiar with the winning. All I remember is Raul Mondesi deciding that he would rather play for the Sugarland Skeeters than play for the Pirates at one point. Oh, and Derek Bell going into Operation Shutdown. Those are my lasting memories of 2 decades of Pittsburgh Pirates baseball.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I think it's great. You know, now Pittsburgh has gone from a place that nobody wants to go to a place where, you know, people are, oh, yeah, like, I want to be in Pittsburgh. That's a good thing. And I've heard Andrew McCutchen talk about that a few different times on Root Sports. You know, where he's saying, like, we want to change the culture here. We want people to want to play in Pittsburgh. And the fact that the reigning NL MVP is in center field and locked up to a long-term deal probably bodes pretty well for that.
Yeah, that helps.
Definitely does.
Now, speaking of guys who it looks like they're moving to Pittsburgh.
Oh, go ahead.
It looks like there's going to be some international flavor coming to the Steel City in the form of Travis Ishikawa.
Yeah, good old Travis Ishikawa, who, if you're not familiar, played like two games with a major league team last year. He's making a bid to be on the opening day roster, because our dear friend Andrew Lambeau was optioned to AAA Indianapolis. So we've got.
Wait a minute. My boy, Andrew Lambeau, I've always had faith in him.
Yes, your undying faith in Andrew Lambeau, it turns out, just did not pan out. If you could not tell the deadpan sarcasm in Jason's voice.
What?
I don't think he necessarily agreed that Andrew Lambeau was ever going to be any good to begin with.
No.
But, sticking with the topic at hand, Gabby Sanchez, great against left-handed pitching. Not so great against right-handed pitching.
Yeah, he needs a partner for that platoon, huh?
Yeah. Turns out they were not planning for Gabby Sanchez's inability to hit right-handed pitching. Who knew that you needed, you know, a platoon partner like that?
Who knew that you needed the long side of the platoon?
apparently, those guys aren't just a dime a dozen, I guess.
Now, yeah, Andrew Lambeau, I thought spring training stats don't matter.
Yeah, apparently they don't, unless you're just so awful that everybody in the stands is like, who's this guy?
Oh, yeah.
Andrew Lambeau is hitting like under 100 on the spring. And my guess is, I didn't get to see a whole lot of Pirates spring training games, but my guess is his at-bats just looked abysmal.
I think that would be a fair assessment since you have written down here 3-for-34 with no extra base hits.
Yeah, not good.
No, that's grim. That's what that is.
That is not good. So, I don't know. Pittsburgh's first base is a mess. Now, I know you've got your own little conspiracy theories about what you think's going to happen at first base.
Well, don't you think here after the amateur draft that they're going to start really giving Kendrys Morales a hard look?
Jason's such a hipster. Amateur. On the amateur draft.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense for the Pirates. I think it definitely does.
I think it'll be interesting, though, because I think they some teams, not necessarily the Pirates, but some teams probably think they'll get a discount. But I wonder if his market will, like, inflate after the draft pick goes away.
You think?
Like, what if, you know, like, what if Mike Napoli's, like, hips are starting to get bad and the Red Sox are like, oh, we don't have to give him a draft pick? How's 5 years and $60 million sound?
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. So, yeah, like, some team could come in and lock him up to a long-term deal.
Because everybody thinks, you know, like, oh, well, you'd only be buying him for half a season, but you could give him whatever you want, right?
Right, yeah, at that point, I guess, why not? There's a little loophole in the old system there.
Yeah.
That's probably what he's got to be hoping for, because you.
He's got to be hoping for that, man.
I don't think you want a half-year deal and then have to go through the exact same thing next season.
Oh man.
Like, oh, I got that draft pick attached to me again.
At that point, you just have to take the contract.
Take the qualifying offer, yeah. Jeez, I think you'll start to see players accept the qualifying offer next season after this.
I mean, Steve and Drew should have.
Oh, yeah. If you're Steve and Drew, I don't understand why. If you're Kendrys Morales, I don't understand why you didn't. And Seattle was just like, all right, well, that's great. Thanks.
I'll tell you the reason why you didn't. His name is Scott Boras.
Yeah, which I can assume probably Kendrys Morales is not very happy that he took Scott Boras' advice on this.
Probably not.
He's about to get all Jerry Maguire on him.
Scott Boras, I think, is doing some damage control on these two situations right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's having Kendrys Morales over for steak night once a week to apologize.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Travis Ishikawa. Oof, boy. Could be. Travis Ishikawa, he's like a poor man's James Loney. That's what Travis Ishikawa is.
Pretty much. He's not good, but he's not bad. Like,
yeah, right. I mean, anytime that you're like, yeah, he's a poor man's James Loney, and James Loney's like a poor man's insert good first baseman here. So you're at a poor man's first baseman.
I had his stats up ready the last time we did this, but here we go. Okay, so he's got 859 plate appearances in his career.
Wait, you mean we've already done this once?
Yeah. And he's hit .260 with a .324 on base and a .721 slugging. Or on OPS, rather.
I was just about to spit my beer everywhere.
.721 OPS.
Did we miss a guy with a .721 slugging percentage?
Oh, man, that'd be brutal.
Yeah, so I mean, he's not like awful,
but he's not good. He only got two plate appearances for the Yankees last year, and they stunk.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not a good sign.
That's really not good. So yeah, I don't know.
Better than Andrew Lambeau.
Yeah, apparently, I guess. We'll see about that. So you wanna talk about the injury bug in Pittsburgh?
I thought that was only in Texas.
Nope. It's apparently a transmittable disease.
Uh-oh.
I don't know whether it's through the fungus in your flip-flops or what it's from, but
you better call the CDC.
Yeah, it made its way all the way to Pittsburgh. Now, fortunately, most of it has occurred in the farm system. Unfortunately, most of it has occurred in the farm system. This is bad because our farm system is full of really good prospects.
And not in the veteran fodder portion of the farm system.
Right, yeah, this isn't like Chris McGinnis went down with an injury. This is like Jameson Taillon, our top pitching prospect. Who has been feeling some elbow discomfort.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I don't like those words.
Yeah, that'll put a little jolt in your morning when you read that. Drinking your cup of Joe.
Are you speaking from experience?
I may have spit coffee everywhere when I read that.
Oh, man.
Over my nice new carpet.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you figure he's taking 2 weeks off with elbow discomfort. So now he's going to, you know, it's going to take him another couple weeks to build up his stamina, get everything back on track. I mean, I'm assuming you're probably talking about missing like a month of the season when you're talking about taking some weeks off at this point in the year.
Well, I mean, at least because you're going to be behind building your arm back up.
Right. So from Jameson Taillon, our best pitching prospect and our closest pitching prospect to the majors as well, we go to Tyler Glasnow.
Uh-oh.
Who was our minor league player of the year last year. He's going to miss the start of the 2014 season due to tightness in his lower back.
That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, no, that's never good because your back's kind of important.
Yeah, your back kind of like helps you bend over.
And throw baseballs and stuff. So he's missing bullpens and he's behind schedule. So again, like, you know, he's... You know, I think he's scheduled to start out in high Bradenton this season. You know, he's already behind schedule. You're talking about, like, what's he going to miss, a month? You know, where are we at this point with back tightness?
You hope he misses a month.
Yeah, like, right.
You hope it's not like, oh, he needs loose bodies cleaned out of his lower back.
Can you have loose bodies and you're just in your lower back?
I don't know. They have them in your, they take them out of people's shoulders and
elbows. You get them out of your elbows, right?
Yeah. What if he got like kicked in the kidney?
Ooh. What if he's like in a street fight?
Yeah, let's like in a fight.
Yeah, he was in a street fight. Somebody kicked him in the kidney. And now it ends up being like something internal.
Yeah.
And that would be serious. My first question would be, why is one of our top pitching prospects in a street fight?
Just call me Dr. House.
I just jumped to conclusions and they're right. It's like the Mentalist and Dr. House combined.
Yes, sir.
So our next big injury. Yeah, I'm not done yet, Jason.
Oh, man.
There's more. And you'll notice all of these injuries are like top 10 prospect injuries.
I did notice that.
You've noticed that trend. Well, this trend is continuing because Austin Meadows is still recovering from a hamstring injury. Probably going to miss the start of the season in West Virginia. He's slated to start out.
Wait a minute. Austin Meadows has a hamstring injury?
Austin Meadows. Our, you know, that guy that we were, you know, everybody wasn't sure whether it was going to be Austin Meadows or your Clint Frazier, those two little Georgia peaches.
Because Clint Frazier has a hamstring injury right now.
For the third time in this podcast, I almost spit my beer out everywhere. Clint Frazier has a ham. What were these guys doing together?
I don't know.
They were lifting.
Chasing girls.
Lifting heavy boxes of steel. Heavy steel boxes together.
That was not as good as what you said the first time.
It was what a box of grain. They were lifting heavy bags of grain. Doesn't come in boxes. Bags of grain.
You said something like that, but then you said, were they running too many parachutes?
They were running, yes, they were running. Also running too many parachutes. And since they're both from Georgia, my last one was they were just carrying too many boxes of guns.
Yeah, and then we said we better go on.
I got so political with that one. I just took it so political. Yeah, so let's move on
field.
To our last injury.
There's more.
You thought there weren't more. There's one more.
I did think Clay, there weren't more because I've never heard this before.
Clay Holmes has Tommy John surgery. Is out for all of 2014.
Oh, that's not funny.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed that stopped your laughing immediately.
Yeah, that's not funny.
So all of those top 20 prospects in the Pirates system.
Well, that sucks.
The nice thing, again, not major league impact talent. Other, you know, like Jameson Taillon, he was in that position where you had like the extreme Pirates fans that don't pay attention to anything really during the season are like, oh, Jameson Taillon, he should be up now. And then you got like the more realistic Pirates fans who are like, well, you know, maybe he'll be on that Gerrit Cole track. You know, we'll see him around June.
Right.
So now we're looking at Jameson Taillon, like he's already getting weeks behind, probably going to be a month behind. Like, realistically, if we need a Jameson Taillon, you know, when could we see him? You know, could we see him right after that Super 2 deadline still? Will they have that confidence in him? You know, what's he going to come out and show him when he comes back from that sore elbow? What if this elbow discomfort doesn't go away? That makes me want to vomit everywhere.
That's how it starts, man.
Ugh.
That's how it started with Carlos Carrasco. Oh, my elbow's a little tingly. Oh, next thing you know, he's going to visit James Andrews.
That's not good. Never a visit you want to have. I'm sure he's a real nice guy, James Andrews.
I'm sure he is.
It must be sad that people besmirch his name all the time. Like, oh, we got to go see Dr. James Andrews. Like he's a real jerk or something. I bet he's a real nice guy. Like, just like a good social experience. Like if you just met him in real life. But when he's got a cut into your elbow, nobody likes him probably.
Yeah, that tends to like, you know, hurt people's opinion of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you will not believe. Oh, my goodness. Johnny Cueto on the mound right now. Just dropped the baseball. Just dropped a baseball in the middle of this game.
Not only did that already happen, but you already watch that in the game.
I did. I just rewinded back to it because this is where it happened in the part of the podcast.
That's sad that you actually rewound it.
I rewound it all the way back. I just watched Marlon Byrd hit a home run again.
Well, then I'll say what you said, what I said the first time. He doesn't play for the Pirates anymore.
No, him and AJ Burnett are probably hanging out, having a good time in Philadelphia.
Having a cheesesteak instead of the Armani Brothers.
Talking about days of yore. Let's wrap up this Pittsburgh talk so we can move on to bigger, better things in Cleveland. Less injury talk over there. Vance Worley. We traded a bag of baseballs to the Twins. Got Vance Worley.
That's what happens when you have all these pitching injuries, man. You got to go out and buy Vance Worley.
You got to build some depth, I guess. That's, yeah, whatever.
Somebody's, you know, you got to have somebody that come up and make some bad starts. Just somebody that can take the ball and Clint Hurdle just leaves him out there.
You just pat him on the butt after the fourth inning when he's given up six runs.
And you're like, I'm not taking you out, kid.
Thanks for falling on the sword for everybody.
That's why we're paying you that not very much money.
Yeah, Pittsburgh just acquired him for cash, so that's okay. And then
that means you're really valuable.
Right, yeah. Everybody loves you when you're just traded for cash.
There was a big demand.
So last thing on the notes today.
Lay it on me.
Jaff Dekker, Jared Hughes are making the trip to AAA Indianapolis with our good friend Andrew Lambeau.
Yeah, they're all going to share a conversion van, drive down together.
Yeah, they're all taking the mystery machine down there.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
just so everybody knows, we're off script now. We haven't practiced this one yet.
Yeah, this is where it's running off the rails, man.
That was all improv right there. Second City, I'm coming to you. All right, so yeah, we got Jaff Dekker. I told you a guy named Jaff is going to have a hard go at it.
I know. I'm right there with you.
There are zero successful Jaffs at anything in history. I've Googled Jaff. There's nobody named Jaff that's done anything good ever.
Just doesn't work.
I mean, he's going to be a trendsetter because he's going to be a moderately successful Jaff. So,
so to speak, yeah.
Godspeed, Jaff. Okay. All right, that's it for Pittsburgh. Jason, tell us what's going on in Goodyear before we get over to Cleveland.
They're going to be a while before they get to Cleveland because they start the year on a road trip.
That's good. That's good when your home ballpark is in Cleveland.
Yeah.
That's a good strategy.
Bud Selig finally figured that out.
Oh, it's cold there.
Hey, why don't we let him start in Oakland this year? Oh, yeah, that'd be a good idea. Although the only problem with that is I get to stay up the first night of the season. My team doesn't play till like 10 o'clock.
It's going to be a long day at work the next day.
Yeah, it is. Anyways. What's going on in Cleveland is that Terry Francona announced on Tuesday that Carlos Santana is going to be his, quote, regular, end quote, third baseman. And that he'll also be the backup catcher.
Ooh, he's wearing two hats this season.
You could say
metaphorically speaking. Also literally.
Yeah, a fielding hat and a catching hat, otherwise known as a helmet.
Yes.
And I just want to know, you know, they're going to have to employ someone, and I'd be willing. I mean, I could do this from home, to plan Yan Gomes' off days around whether or not a left-hander is pitching. I mean, I could do that. I could get a big calendar.
Yeah, plan it out.
I could just plan it out, you know? The only problem is, like, pitchers get scratched, and then the whole plan is just going to blow up. And Lonnie Chisenhall is going to have to bat against the left-hander. And
the whole world's going to collapse upon itself at that point.
Everything's going to collapse upon itself at that point. But, yeah, moving out of the world of hyperbole and into real life, that is a real concern because, I mean, like we were talking before the podcast, you know, if there's one time that a backup catcher knows he's going to catch is when there's a day game after a night game.
Oh, isn't that just going to throw the old monkey in the wrench there?
Yeah, so, like, what happens if it's a day game after a night game? Say it's a getaway day, right? So right. It's a Thursday noon game. And I don't know. They're out in Oakland, and Scott Kazmir is pitching. They're going to put Lonnie Chisenhall at third base? Because that's definitely not putting him in a position to succeed. You know,
right.
It's like, I understand. I mean, Bob and I, you know, if you go back to last year's podcast, we talked a long time about how they being the organization, say Lonnie can't hit left-handed pitchers, but they never give him a chance to get at-bats against left-handed pitchers.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I understand, you know, he's not going to develop as a prospect, but if you're going to protect him like that, if that's going to be, like, your organizational policy, and then his one chance to play that week comes against, you know, like, Chris Sale. And then what's going to happen is in May, when he's batting, like, 180, they're going to be like, well, he's really been inconsistent, so we're going to send him back to Columbus. You know, it's like some prospect, you know, his first game is against – it's like Andrew Lambeau's first game being against Justin Verlander and everyone being like, well, he didn't look very good. It's like, well, what do you expect, you know? I don't know. I think – I just want Lonnie Chisenhall to get a decent number of at-bats. That's all I really care about. I think he'll probably DH – a fair amount in the early going because Giambi's going to be on the DL. But he's a good DH platoon partner for Ryan Rayburn in that way, you know, as they're bat from opposite sides of the plate. But I just don't want to see Jason Giambi get at bats instead of Lonnie Chisenhall. I just don't want to see that.
Yeah. What does that really say about the state of your franchise?
I mean, because it's just, what's the point of that? You know, are we building for the future or are we trying to win now? I mean.
And does Giambi really give you the best chance to win now in any scenario?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, Lonnie Chisenhall, he's like Travis Ishikawa. He's not good, but he's not bad.
Right.
The only difference is Lonnie Chisenhall is still 25 years old. And he's only had, like, 600 plate appearances in his career stretched over, like, three seasons, you know? I mean, he was worth – I'm pretty sure I had it up here earlier. He was worth half a win last year, and he only got to play in 94 games.
Right.
It was very sparingly. Like, you know, they always talk about his inconsistent at-bats. Well, he played inconsistently. It's hard to get into a rhythm when you play like 2 days a week. I mean, that's how it's like Mike Avilas and Elliot Johnson make a lot of money at the end of their careers because they are good at being bench players.
Right. Yeah. They can come and they can give you consistent production inconsistently.
Exactly. Precisely.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any problem with Carlos Santana playing third base. I just have a problem with its like ripple effect on the roster and how they're going to paint themselves into a little bit of a corner because they don't have another catcher other than Santana.
Right.
I mean, as far as Santana playing third base, I think he needs to play regular season games before you can really definitively say like, oh, he's going to be okay. But I think he's done enough to get that chance.
I agree. I don't think you want the next Matt LaPorta on your hands, where like 6 years from now you're still trying to figure out what you got in Lonnie Chisenhall.
Right. I mean, he has one option year left. Who cares? He's batted like 400. Like I think last year in Columbus, he literally was batting 400.
Yeah. You know what you got when you sent him down to the minors. I think you got to figure out what to do with him against the next level.
Yeah, so I just hope he gets enough at bats to get a realistic chance is all. Let's see here, what else is going on? Oh, Niger Morgan.
Oh, do you mean T Plush? Is that who you're talking about?
I don't know. You know, he made a statement at the beginning of spring training that he was leaving T Plush at home.
Or in Japan, maybe.
Yeah, we haven't heard from T-Plush at all, but now that they announced Monday that he was going to be on the opening day roster. So I don't. I'm wondering now if like he's requesting a separate locker for T Plush. But anyways, Nigel Morgan. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who at the beginning of camp had about a snowball's chance in hell of making this team. He needed somebody to get hurt, man, and Michael Bourne came through for him. They put Michael Bourne on the 15-day disabled list, which isn't surprising. I mean, even it really shouldn't be an alarm bell that, like, something more is wrong, because as we said last week, typical recovery time for Bourne's injury is 3 to 4 weeks. But they were running around acting like he might be ready in a week.
Right.
I mean, that just doesn't make sense. Plus, with the history of hamstring injuries, you want to be sure he's healthy. So he's going to start on the disabled list, and T Plush is going to start on the opening day roster. Now, what's interesting, though, is I want to see if Morgan actually plays a lot or if he's just riding the pine. Because if he gets a fair amount of playing time, I don't know how else to take it other than that no one was comfortable moving Michael Brantley back to center field. And if he does ride the bench and Brantley plays center and they use like Rayburn in left or something or Avilas, it seems weird to me to keep Nigel Morgan instead of someone like Francoeur, because Nigel Morgan's left-handed and Francoeur hits right-handed and at least has some power. And it just seems like a weird decision to me. Like, I thought Francoeur was going to be the one who got that last outfield spot, even though Bourne got hurt. I still thought, like, well, Brantley can play center, and Murphy can probably play center in a pinch, you know?
Right.
They apparently didn't want to put Michael Brantley back in center field. So we're going with T Plush, man.
Hey, why not?
Oh yeah, why?
I bet it didn't cost you a lot.
No, I don't know what it cost, but I'm sure it was a whole pile of nothing.
Now here's what I'm curious about: what's going on with the back end of your rotation?
Well, they named Carlos Carrasco the fifth starter today, actually, or it's really the fourth starter, because I'm pretty sure Danny Salazar is going to be the actual fifth starter because they want to skip him.
Right.
When they get the chance. But Carrasco, you know, he was the odds-on favorite at the beginning of camp because he was out of options, and they pretty much said, like, Carrasco's going to be on this team. He's either going to be in the rotation or in the bullpen. He pitched okay, and then he kind of ran off the rails, and it looked like he was doing everything he could to not end up in the rotation, even though they were willing to hand it to him. But then he pitched pretty good on Monday, and Tomlin pitched kind of so-so yesterday. And, you know, I think it was one of those things, like, they just wanted to see a decent performance. Carrasco was the guy that they really, really wanted to give it to. Because they need – this is his last chance to maximize his value as a starter, you know?
Right.
And they need that guy in Columbus stretched out, ready to – to fill in, and since Tomlin had an option remaining, you know, he was the obvious choice for that guy. So, I mean, you know, Tomlin could be up by the end of April if Carrasco, you know, I don't know, throws a beanball at somebody. It's not like he's ever done that before.
Certainly not.
Yeah. We'll see. Cookie Carrasco, man, he's got a lot of potential, but he just does not seem to have the mental strength at times to deal with, like, when things start falling apart, like when he gets some runners on, when he gets hit a little bit. You know, that was Tito's big complaint of that rocky period in spring, as he said, he's got, like, a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, and a couple guys would get hits, and all of a sudden he wouldn't want to throw his fastball anymore. It's like, well, You know, that's like if Justin Verlander's getting hit on his fastball and stops throwing it. Well, you're a fastball pitcher, man. Like, that's – you live and die by that.
Right.
You can't just go away from it because, you know, Alex Gordon squared one up. Like, it's going to happen. So, the roster, though, is all done. It's all set, man.
Really? Everything's okay with your roster? Ooh, that's got to be kind of reassuring.
Everything's decided.
What's your starting lineup looking? I feel like we got a pretty good idea. It's going to be a little different without Bourne in there.
Yeah. So in the rotation, we've got Masterson, Kluber, McAllister, Carrasco, and Salazar.
Right.
In the bullpen, Tito decided to go with the old 8-man bullpen again. So he's got John Axford, Cody Allen, Brian Shaw, Mark Zepchinski, Josh Outman, Vinny Pestano, Blake Wood, and they gave the last spot to Scott Acheson. And, you know, a lot of people are mad about that. They think, you know, CeCe Lee had a great spring. You don't want CeCe Lee as the 8th man in the bullpen. You know, you want CeCe Lee down in AAA, ready and pitching every couple of days. I mean, at that spot in the bullpen, like, think of how they used Matt Albers last year. That spot is where you get abused, you know? Like, you might not pitch for a week, and then Carrasco has a bad start, and you got to pitch 4 innings. Like, you don't want CeCe Lee doing that. CeCe Lee has the potential to be, like, a Joe Smith kind of reliever. You want him when he comes up, you know, to take this place of someone where he's going to be pitching all the time.
Right.
So with the 8-man bullpen, they go to the 3-man bench, the, like, uber versatile 3-man bench of Ryan Rayburn, Mike Aviles, and Elliot Johnson. And the way I have the starting lineup without Bourne would be in this order: Brantley, Swisher, Kipnis, Santana, Cabrera, Gomes, Murphy, Chisenhall, and Morgan.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, there'll be some swapping there based on who's pitching. Like, Murphy and Rayburn are going to be in a fairly straight platoon, I would guess.
Right.
And Chisenhall's probably going to DH unless there's a lefty, in which case, you know, I don't know, Mike Aviles might DH, or you could let Gomes DH and Santana catch and Aviles play third. It's going to be this kind of, like, revolving door.
It's going to be fluid.
Yeah, there's going to be
all season long
fluid positions there. They will need to make 3 40-man moves in order to get Morgan, Acheson, and Giambi on the roster, which
is
That's one of the things that ticks me off about this Giambi thing, because they gave him a non-roster invitation, so he's not even on the 40-man. And you can't put a player on the 15-day DL. A player on the 15-day DL still counts on your 40-man. He has to be on there.
Right.
It's only players on the 60-day DL that don't count.
That don't count against you.
Right. So they got to get rid of 3 of these guys out of these following names: Justin Sellers, Scott Barnes, Colt Hines, Frank Hermann, and Preston Gilmett. I don't think Nick Hagedorn or Brian Price are really at risk, but, I mean, they're there. Nick Hagedorn's certainly done enough disappointing, I guess I could see that. But Justin Sellers, they really like him, but they already have utility infielders, and they got him in a trade for cash, so they'll probably cut him and hope he passes through.
Right.
I would guess that one of Barnes or Hines will get cut, but they're both left-handers, so I doubt both of them will. I hope they don't cut Preston Gilmett, because he's a serviceable reliever. They might try Frank Hermann, since he's still rehabbing from Tommy John. Like, he's pitching again, but it's his first, you know, experience since Tommy John. They might try to sneak him through, I guess.
Right.
But I just don't see cutting someone like Preston Gilmett, who has value, so you can put Jason Giambi on the DL. That just boggles my mind. But.
Right. Or at least you hope that they don't do that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring this up when we were talking about Starling Marte.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to rub your nose in it. Because I'm not that kind of guy, Jason. I'm just not going to do that to you.
I'm that kind of guy. I do that to you all the time.
What? Oh, I know you are. What, did Justin Masterson get his contract extension with you guys?
No.
Oh, no, he did not.
He did not.
He did not. Oh, please.
I don't know if you saw the rant I posted on Friday.
Your dissertation on how the Indians should have signed him?
How they screwed that one up?
I can relate to that because someone was rubbing my nose in AJ Burnett a little bit this offseason. But go ahead, Jason, please. Tell me your hardships of Justin Masterson's contract extension.
I will. So like Andy said, the extension talks have broken off, although both sides...
was it amicable?
Both sides claim that they're willing to discuss more at any time.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
I'm sure. Here's basically what happened, okay? Now, when Masterson put out this deal about how he'd take, you know, a 2 or 3 year contract, that was a really clever PR move, okay? Because he looks like a good guy. Even though he's still asking, we found out, for about $17 million a year. He's asking it for only 2 or 3 years. So he looks like a nice guy, and the Indians look cheap when they turn him down.
Right.
I mean, there's no discount there in terms of, like, average annual value. Like, they're talking about contracts like 2 years, $35 million, 3 years, $51 million. Those are some serious average annual value numbers. But to a small market team, the discount on the years is a huge discount. I mean, a huge discount. All Chris Antonetti talks about is mitigating risk, okay? Which, again, I understand. That's what we talked about with the Marte contract, right? Like, the Pirates took on some risk in that deal.
Right.
The upside on that deal is that he turns out to be better than that, right? Or at least as good, and then it works out okay. But you want to talk about a deal that mitigates risk. A guy who's a very good starter, okay? Fine, I won't call him a true number one starter, although I think he is poised to have a really, really good season this year. I mean, we talk about spring training doesn't matter. He hasn't allowed a run. I mean, he just looks dominant.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what you want to see, right? But to take a guy who's a number one or at least a number two starter, the anchor to your staff, right? And he's like, you know what? I'll forego free agency. I'll stay for 2 years for $35 million. He just accepted all the risk. I mean, you can play yourself out of that contract so quickly.
Right? Right, in this current market, yeah.
Two years is going to be gone so fast. And, you know, people are complaining because, you know, Masterson actually did get some backlash when the numbers came out that he was asking for $17 million. And there were a lot of people saying, like, oh, he's not worth that. He's not a true number one starter. I got news for you. $17 million a year isn't number one starter money anymore.
Right, yeah.
Look at Kershaw. Look at Verlander. Look at, you know, Masahiro Tanaka. I mean, $17 million, that's a deal. Okay, that's Masterson's going rate. The only deal is the years. I mean, I think he could easily next year as a free agent get a 5 or 6 year contract. Even with all the draft pick nonsense, I don't think it matters. Once you cross that threshold, past Ubaldo, past Irvin Santana, I don't think anybody cares about the draft pick anymore.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, if it's a guy that you're willing to go that 5, 6 year, yeah, you don't care about the draft pick at that point.
I mean, don't you think that he can get 5 or 6 years next year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he were to hit the open market, I think he'll be in line for one of those deals.
I mean, he'll probably get some stupid contract that's like 5 years and $100 million where it's like...
Right, you get it from like a team like Seattle or something.
Yeah, and he'll make like $10 million the first year and like $20 million the last, or $25 million the last year.
Right. That would not surprise me at all.
I understand it's a lot of money for them. But when you look at their rotation, he's the only thing that you can be sure about. Okay? And you've locked up Santana long term. You've locked up Brantley long term. You've got Kipnis controlled through arbitration, and you're trying to extend him.
And that was the one thing I was wondering. Is that why you think maybe the whole Masterson thing didn't work out? Are they trying to maybe lock up some other players like Kipnis in lieu of Masterson?
I mean, they're claiming that they were negotiating with Kipnis the whole time they're negotiating Masterson. Supposedly, they're still talking to Kipnis. I mean, I don't know. I hope that's the reason, I guess. But if you want to look at it like that, if you want to look at it as like there's an X dollar amount that we can't go over, man, you are upset that you got Michael Bourne right now.
Right, yeah.
Isn't that Masterson's money? I mean,
right, yeah.
Couldn't you put Tyler Holt out there and get almost... I mean, you could put Michael Vilas out there. Put Nigel Morgan out there for all I care. I mean, isn't that Justin Masterson's money if you look at it that way?
Yeah, that would be one way to look at that. As a hindsight is 2020 type general manager, absolutely. I mean, I like to do that a lot with the Pirates.
Don't get me wrong, okay? I think Chris Antonetti probably looks at that deal and is like, man, I wish I could sign off on this, but it's not my money. You know, and he takes that to the Dolans, and the Dolans are like, so you're telling me my payroll next year is going to be how much?
Right, yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that's how this conversation really went, right? Like, like Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff are sitting around, and they're not like, $17 million for Masterson? What is he, nuts? I mean, they know what the market is. I have a feeling that it's the kind of deal that's, you know, vetoed by ownership. You know, like you're saying, maybe they said, like, okay, well, you've got $20 million to play with. If you give $17 to Masterson, I guess you're not keeping Kipnis. And then they go back and, like, okay, maybe we better keep Kipnis instead of Masterson.
Right, yeah.
And they have to make this decision, and that's what they're trying to sort out, I guess. But I don't know. It's just... he's the one piece. When you look at the alignment of the contracts, right? Like, you've got Brantley, you've got Rayburn, you've got Murphy, you've got Swisher, you've got Bourne, you've got Santana. Kipnis is under arbitration control, and you've got Gomes under arbitration control. You've got Kluber and Salazar and McAllister and Carrasco and Tomlin and Bauer all under arbitration control. You've got Lindor to replace Cabrera, Naquin to replace an outfielder. What don't you have there? Justin Masterson.
Yep, your guy at the top.
What you don't have is your best pitcher. I mean, if you let him walk, man, you better hope Trevor Bauer figures it out.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. So what's going on with the minor league assignments? You guys reassigned some players?
Well, we haven't yet. Those are supposed to be announced Thursday and Friday. There's a few that we know their assignments, like Trevor Bauer and Josh Tomlin got assigned to Columbus. But I was just going to run through, excuse me, real quick, my best guesses of where some players will be assigned.
Ooh, where should we keep our eyes peeled to?
Yeah.
I'm excited about a couple of these, by the way.
Yeah. In Columbus, there'll be three guys to watch in the rotation, which is actually nice because a lot of times your AAA rotation is full of guys who are just like fodder, like Vance Worley or something.
Right.
So in Columbus, you'll have Bauer, which I'm obviously going to keep a close eye on him, Tomlin, and TJ House, who's very serviceable, and I could see TJ House getting some major league starts this year, along with Jose Ramirez. Jesus Aguilar should be in Columbus. He's spent too much time in Akron already. Carlos Moncrief should be in Columbus. Because Nigel Morgan's on the major league roster, I would assume that Tyler Holt will go to Columbus. CC Lee, Preston Gilmett, Brian Price. Those guys will all be in Columbus along with Sellers if he survives. Akron's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, I'm excited about this.
Because Lindor will start there again, I would assume. Tyler Naquin should start there again. Cody Anderson, Joey Wendell, Jordan Smith, Tony Walters, Jared Saborin, Bryson Miles, Jake Lowry. Kyle Crockett will probably return to Akron, but I don't think he'll probably stay there long because he does have some innings there from last year. And Alex Monsav will probably go there too. So it'll be interesting because they'll have three catchers in Akron. They'll probably have Walters, Lowry, and Monsav. They'll probably just have to DH one of them every day, I would guess.
Got to fit them all somewhere.
In Carolina, they'll probably have Dorsis Paulino, Luis Lugo, Eric Haas, Eric Gonzalez, and then Adam Plutko, who they took in last year's draft, be fun to watch. And Sean Morimondo probably will go there too.
Plutko sounds like a fun
Price is Right game.
Price is Right, yeah, yeah.
And then
I'm glad we're on the same page with that.
Yeah, and then in Lake County, Francisco Mejia, who's their big, you know, 18-year-old catching prospect, that'll be his first taste of like full season ball. Mitch Brown will hopefully be there. Hopefully he performs well. Anthony Santander, although I think he might start the year in extended spring training. Kieran Lovegrove, Sean Brady, Dace Keim, I think is how you pronounce his name. And then the ginger, Clint Frazier, will probably start there once his hamstring injury clears up.
Yes, that's who I'm excited about. We got to get to Lake County this year and see a game.
Yeah.
When he's there. We got to make sure he's playing.
Yeah.
There were a few Lindor games that we went to where he wasn't playing.
Yeah. I think Lindor's back seems to be fine. So hopefully we missed a bullet on that. And I think he'll probably play, you know, a couple months in Akron and then be promoted to Columbus. That's where it's going to be kind of weird because Ronnie Rodriguez played in Akron last year, and it would seem like he should start in Columbus. But if you know you're going to promote Lindor, then you're kind of boxing Ronnie Rodriguez out because Jose Ramirez definitely needs to be in Columbus.
Right, yeah.
So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if one of these guys gets traded at some point this year because they're running out of room. I mean, honestly. Like Ramirez, Rodriguez, Lindor, Wendell, Gonzalez.
They're already moving guys to catcher.
Paulino. Yeah, they had to move Walters from shortstop to catcher. I'm excited to see Tony Walters catch in Akron this year. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We got to check out whenever they come up to Erie. We got to check out that first series when they're up there.
Yep, I agree. But we'll know for sure, start knowing some tomorrow, and we'll know pretty much everyone by Friday. So. Something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Anything else that we want to hit on with Cleveland?
I don't think so.
Got it all? Well, this week we got some stuff coming out on the website. We'll have our preseason predictions, which we did last year. Raging success. I think we picked two award winners between the two of us last year.
Raging success.
With the combined intellect of Chris Bradley joining us, I feel like we can't fail with this, Jason.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Take our predictions to Vegas. We're going to get you three, at least. I'm predicting three. So we'll have our preseason predictions coming out. We'll also be releasing our individual top prospect list for each of our organizations. So Cleveland's top 20 and Pittsburgh's top 20. Those will be coming out this week as well. And then we'll have our Prospect Spectacular, second annual. We can say that, right? Second annual Prospect Spectacular?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll be recording that Sunday. So that'll be – look for that, you know, either late Sunday or, you know, Monday at some point. So we'll be talking about the top prospects in each of the organizations that we're covering this season as well. Right. Anything else that I'm missing? Anything else coming out this week?
I think that's probably about it.
Yeah, it covers all that. I hope so. I mean, that's what I wrote in my notes. So if I took the time to write it down, I hope I wrote down the right stuff at least, I guess.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us today. We'd like to, again, thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes, you give us a rate and review. You can check us out on the interwebs at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, @tristatebb, and check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
I sit on a throne of lies.
Jerk.